This podcast on Sports360AZ.com is brought to you by your Valley Hyundai dealers. We appreciate the Valley Hyundai dealers and their support.
Now, the Brad Sessmann Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Monday. Thanks for being with us. Had a great weekend. Went up to the rim on Friday. Was old school. You know, we have friends who have RVs and all that stuff, but I just said, you know what, let's get out of here. Let's take our dog and just the missus, the Charger fan I've slept with for 28, 29 years, whatever it is, and let's go up to the rim and let's go pitch a tent and let's just go be that couple and just decompress for 24 hours. I have a DVR. I don't have to sit there and watch games all day. I need to get away from this. Guys, you're in the same space. If all you do every weekend is watch game after game after game, like Eric was down watching TCU, poor TCU, or poor SMU rather, showing up on the doorstep of TCU, but he gets away and he goes down there and he hangs out with his friends and he comes back, and I'd say you're much better when you get away. Just me.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah? I mean,
it's important that I get away.
And when you're at a game, you're not sitting there like the journalist, the objective.
No. It's nice sitting in a seat instead of a press box.
Do you paint your face?
No.
Do you have signs? Do you?
Nope.
You're not much of getting hammered, so that's not you.
No.
So
I wore a white TCU shirt because it was a whiteout Saturday.
Oh, it was a whiteout.
And it was a good day for a whiteout in Fort Worth because it was about 97 degrees at kickoff.
So I sent Eric a text about, I don't know, during the start of the ASU game. So I was back in time to watch that live. And did you do the double today? And he's like, what, do we have a corporate jet that we can fly out of DFW? In all honesty, how far of a drive would it have been for you to go from the TCU game?
It's about 6.5 hours.
Okay, and the game ended, TCU-SMU. It ended at kickoff, but in reality, the ending time was...
Oh, it was a close game. I mean, it was not... I mean, the score was not indicative of how close of a game it was.
All right. But the Ponies put up a fight.
They did. It was a game until about the start of the fourth quarter, and then
you could have driven. My point is you could have gone to Lubbock if you really were into it. It would have been like halftime?
No.
You would have got there at halftime?
No. I would have missed it.
Entirely.
Yeah, I would have missed the whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe with the weather delay, I would have been there for the fourth quarter. But that's a horrible drive. I mean, like...
What's the flight cost from Dallas to up there?
No idea. I've never been to Lubbock. I know where it is.
Who,
I know it's in the Panhandle.
Who would want to go to Lubbock?
I don't know. I would.
Those are two really bad teams, in my opinion, that played Saturday night. There was not much. And Jeff Van Rapphorst is going to be with us here in a little bit.
Yep.
On the college end. It was just two teams that aren't very good in the bottom part of their conference.
I was curious, Brad, when I opened my phone on Sunday, if I'd have a slew of tweets about Todd Graham's time at ASU being over and Ray Anderson pulling the plug and it's time to move in a different direction. But that, I guess, is not the case, and that maybe this isn't the right time for that.
Well, I don't think it's the right time yet. So those three games, none of them were within the conference. So you open conference play this week. So you could make the argument. And I actually thought ASU got a little bit better in some areas, but you have to look at it and say it's against a bad team. And people are going to say, well, the final score, what game are you watching? If you watch from about the middle to late end of the third quarter until the final drive, I got it. But there was actually some progress being made there on one end. On the other end, Kingsbury took his foot off the gas. So, you know, we're going to talk some college football with Jeff on the ASU front. Full disclosure, I saw very little of the U of A game on the DVR. It's just, it was UTEP. So I can't sit here and get anything out of that other than, why is U of A only a 3-point underdog at Utah? That's a small number given where U of A is this point of the season. And it's a Pac-12 South matchup. Unlike ASU, which has Oregon here, I've not seen the number on ASU yet. I just glimpsed at U of A and saw it was 3, and that's it seems pretty low. The Cardinal game yesterday and the NFL overall, there's a lot being written today about the quality of play in the NFL. And we have sat here for the last, I don't know, since we started doing this in 2011, pointing out that the NFL is starting to do this. But the NFL lover will say, well, explain then how it is on the NFL Network. They had 8 million views of the Bengals and Texans game the other night, which truly was watching pigs mate. It was just, oh, just dreadful football. And I could explain it very simply. You have the fantasy football guy that wants to see how Deshaun Watson performed. You have the A.J. Green fans. You have guys like Eric that are big Andy Dalton guys because he went to TCU. I'm just kidding. And then there's just some people that need to, you know, get their football fix. But I would say that more often than not, if you look at the games yesterday, and I will start with the Cardinals game because it wasn't just Carson Palmer that wasn't good with a quarterback rating just barely north of 60. Okay. It's things like players making just dumb decisions, dumb moves, not knowing the game of football like they should know the game of football. It's the, you know, the concussion thing is brought up. I think it was Tirico the other night in the Thursday night game. This person won't return, or the Texans lost several players to an injury. No, it's called a concussion. But you guys are trying to slam the mouths on the announcers about this. In the UCLA game, oh, it wasn't a blow to the head. The guy's helmet goes flying off. He's lucky his head didn't snap with it against Memphis. This is on the college front. I was talking with a friend this morning. He was like, "Did you see that?" An hour later, the head of the Pac-12 official said, "Oh, no, that was that had nothing to do with a concussion." Right. Go back and look at that play. But the NFL yesterday, Carolina, I think it was a 9-3 game. Seattle, San Francisco was 12-9. And it wasn't just so much that it was low scoring. Okay. It was just hard to watch. Like, the Raiders absolutely annihilated the Jets. The Jets are a hard team to watch. And so there's all these theories going around today about the quality of play and how bad the offenses are and how bad the offensive lines are. And this goes back to the fake football that's being played in August. You know, it's pretty evident that the NFL is a war of attrition. And so we're going to take the whole month of August. We're just going to rip fans off right and left. And we're not going to play our guys. And then we're just going to go through the motions. And then the first few weeks of the NFL season are going to look just like dog meat. Just hamburger ground round. Last week's Cardinals game at Detroit was not aesthetically pleasing. Yesterday's Cardinals game at Indianapolis was just flat, not very good football. Now, the cheerleader will come out and say, "Hey, the team won the game." The quality of play in the NFL, if I'm giving truth serum to people within the league who aren't drinking the Kool-Aid, who would get fined and fired if they actually said what they truly believe, so they smile and cash their check because they're just happy to be part of a brand that people are still watching. But anybody who's watched the NFL for even a bit of time, you cannot argue that the quality of play is not good. Yes, Denver beat the snot out of Dallas yesterday. Just beat them into a pulp. But the quality of play within that game was not Denver-Dallas in December or November. It's not. And then you have Ezekiel Elliott taking, you know, a play off and not even running after a guy that picks a ball. Ezekiel Elliott and his family may wonder why guys are after him off the field, on the field. It's because of stuff like yesterday. It's just nonsense when a player quits. And so he gets called out in the NFL network, and then his PR people say, "Well, media just hates on us. And if you're a loyal Zeke fan, you're going to stick with Zeke fan." And you see what he does yesterday, where he doesn't help his team out. And he ran about as many yards as I have this morning here in the studio, walking back and forth, talking to Eric about the show. And that's it. It's everybody else's fault. So the NFL yesterday was just a hard watch. Now, if we're going to talk about X and O's of yesterday's game and things that were, to me, impressive on the Cardinals' end, it was impressive to see J.J. Nelson make an enormous catch. J.J. Nelson has become this, I'd say, somewhat of an enigma. He has balls that clank off of his hands that he's wide open and he should be able to catch. And then he has plays where he's able to streak down the field and he comes up with the big catch, which helps the Cardinals to the victory. Carson Palmer wasn't good yesterday, but he was good for about the last 6-5 minutes when they needed him to be good. so his quarterback rating did blow. Whether Drew Stanton was warming up or simply throwing on the sideline doesn't matter to me. What I've seen out of this organization the last few years is we've got it figured out with Carson Palmer, and I don't know, when I see Carson Palmer through the first 2 weeks of the season, yeah, he made a couple throws yesterday, but he also made quite a few throws that weren't good. And so, you know, you go down the roster of yesterday's game, and yeah, it looked like a team that couldn't run the football. And you can say, well, they did get some production out of Chris Johnson. As the season goes along, guys, Chris Johnson's going to get grounded down. Same with Kerwin Williams. You know, depth at running back within the league, you've got to have a lot of guys to get through a season. I'm not counting on David Johnson coming back. Anybody who says, so when do you think you could be back with David Johnson? Are you kidding me? This is just survival mode right now. Yeah, winning every game is paramount. I'm not going to sit here and care one lick a week from now about the Cardinals and how sloppy they looked against Indianapolis, but they looked sloppy. Chandler Jones wasn't good early. Chandler Jones was a beast in the second half of that game. And Indianapolis is not good. That team's not good in any way, shape, or form. You know, Tyrann Mathieu came up with a big play yesterday. It was good to see Tyrann Mathieu come up with a big play. I'm rooting for Tyrann Mathieu. The organization gave him an enormous contract, and he's been hurt. Let's call it as it is. Let's not sit here and sugarcoat it. Finding a receiver opposite Larry Fitzgerald, when I heard people with the organization back in March and April, John Brown's going to be great. John Brown's going to be healthy. I don't know. Maybe you shouldn't have said that to get people excited. Heard that more than once. This is going to be great having John Brown back. Well, where is he? So, you know, I can go on and on about it. Yesterday was a win. Get it out of the way. And now you have Dallas coming here, and everybody talked about Dallas, including myself. I mean, I thought Dallas was going to come in here. I think Peter even said it last week. Dallas is going to beat the Cardinals. I don't know that now. I mean, the Cowboys looked awful yesterday. Looked just awful. And I don't think the Cardinals are that great. But, you know, in this town, in this market, the Cardinals can go through this season and not make the playoffs. The Cardinals can go through this season and finish with just a handful of wins. Or the Cardinals can go through this season and win 13 or 14 games. You beat Dallas here in Phoenix, that's all that matters to a lot of people. It's the same group that gives me the, if ASU beats U of A, it's a successful season, which is one of the most inane arguments I've ever heard. You can go one, yep, as long as that one win is over U of A, it's a great season. It's the same thing with the Cardinals. So I'm going to go a little bit further into this and some Diamondbacks on the other side. The Triple G fight with Canelo and there's a couple other things I wrote down from the weekend too. That's all straight ahead. Jeff Van Rapphorst in about 10 minutes. I'm Brad Sussmat. So the Diamondbacks are hitting this interesting space within their schedule. They have a 5-game lead on Colorado for the wild card. I think it's 7.5 overall for even the second spot if they were to collapse. So these games this weekend against San Francisco, to me at least, felt a little bit like mid-August. A little bit like, okay, we know that we're not catching the Dodgers. I shouldn't say we, but the Diamondbacks know that they're not catching the Dodgers. They also know that they're going to, in all likelihood, be in the postseason. They want to get that wrapped up, and they will. But they take 2 of 3. Greinke pitches well. Greinke actually hit. It was like a headline from there. And they did a nice job, I think, of just working through, although Taijuan Walker didn't do much. Taijuan Walker is going to go to the bullpen. He'll be down there. I think the interesting side story for Torey Lovello is, do you go with Greinke now in the wild card game, or do you go with Robbie Ray? Robbie Ray struck out 10, didn't walk anybody, allowed just 6 hits against the Giants. Now, I know it's not Colorado, but it's an interesting decision between Ray, and given how Ray has dominated the Dodgers, and that's who it's going to be. I think it's going to be Dodgers, Diamondbacks, and Cubs, and Nats, the way that it's shaping up. And I'm counting on the Diamondbacks winning the wild card, of course. Colorado, on the other hand, so Milwaukee's trying really hard. Milwaukee's trying to stick around. Milwaukee's had some injuries in their starting rotation. I think the Rockies are going to stick with it. The other interesting story here is the MVP race. So this week, after the Diamondbacks play the Padres, and that's where they are tonight, it's Patrick Corbin's throwing tonight. So you have the Marlins rolling in. So you have Giancarlo Stanton, you have Goldschmidt, you have Arenado, you have Blackman. Anthony Rendon is getting some run too, but I think it's really Goldschmidt, Stanton, but Arenado at third base, his defense at third base is so good. But I don't know, when you look at his numbers, he's in Colorado. He is in the high country, the high air, and the numbers I think are somewhat inflated. Okay, and Goldschmidt's no slouch over at first base. Arenado's done a terrific job, but I think on the defensive end, Stanton, I can't see it happening. If you're the MVP, you've got to be able to make the postseason. Now, he's going to come here this weekend and going to see batting practice. Like, if you're putting your planner ahead, go to see the Diamondbacks Marlins, get there early, and watch Stanton take batting practice. Just watch. Because he'll put on a show. He'll probably hit the scoreboard a few times. And there'll be a national spotlight on that matchup this weekend because it's Goldschmidt and Stanton in the MVP race. But it's now shaping up more than ever to be Rockies. The Rockies went through a little bit of up and down. I think when they took two of three here, straightened them out. Rockies, Diamondbacks, and when it is that matchup, that's where I think you have to make that decision. If you're Torrey Lovello, do you go with Greinke or do you go with Ray? And I think the natural inclination is to go with Ray. Then it's, okay, Patrick Corbin has pitched so well. Are those your three? Zach Godley's been very good, and you can eliminate Taijuan Walker. In the next couple weeks, we've seen Archie Bradley used in some different forms, different situations with some explanations given. But you want your best, and when the season comes to an end, do I trust Fernando Rodney in a one-game playoff? In the ninth inning with a close game, nut-cutting game, do I trust Fernando Rodney, or do I bring Archie Bradley in? Archie Bradley really has become the face of this franchise, in my opinion. Paul Goldschmidt puts up the numbers. Paul Goldschmidt's the MVP guy, but Paul Goldschmidt last week when he got his 1,000th hit was like, eh. Archie Bradley's out there. In the media end of things, that's great. And you guys, if you've watched me long enough, know that I'm not into that per se. But I think there are those exceptions. Zach Greinke doesn't like talking to media, not comfortable with media, not a face of the franchise, but the best pitcher. Paul Goldschmidt doesn't like talking about himself. He'll do the media thing. He gets it. He's fine. But he's not going to own it like Archie Bradley owns it. You know, J.D. Martinez hit another home run this weekend. It's just become like, oh, yeah, the Diamondbacks took two or three. And by the way, J.D. hit his 40th and they lost. So the pressure's coming down on this organization, too, regardless of making the postseason. The J.D. Martinez, they're going to say, well, we'll address that at the end of the season. And that's just pure bullpucky, okay? Yeah, I said bullpucky on the show. They're addressing it behind the scenes. There's no way, no how, no shape, no form that they have not been in contact with the Martinez camp and trying to figure something out. We've also seen some stories that I think any good agent would do, leak out, especially to the Boston Globe, about how great J.D. Martinez's numbers have been here, but also in Boston. And wouldn't it be great to have J.D. just doubles? Wouldn't it be great to have J.D. Martinez here in Boston, try to get the market stoked up and see what direction he wants to go? If you're J.D. Martinez, you come home this week and you play Miami and you're drawing 18,000, 20,000, 22,000. You go to the playoff game, you have the one-game playoff. Let's say it's here. Do I think that game, because it's Colorado and Arizona, do I think that game is going to be put in prime time? No. If that game's put at 2 in the afternoon, are they going to sell out? It's going to be close. Like, Eric, do you think they're going to sell out?
I do. I think they will.
You think there's that much buzz going on right
now? I think so. It's a big stadium, but I think this town has not experienced playoff baseball for so long that there's going to be even more excitement if and when that happens.
One game playoff.
Yep.
It would be 2 weeks from this Wednesday.
It's crazy.
2 weeks from this Wednesday. The season is over in 13 days. So I'm still not seeing the place jam-packed. I have said it's a different time. People don't have to go to games anymore.
Yep.
It is a different time, but Is this going to be, it's like U2's in concert tomorrow night. That's going to be a hot ticket. There's going to be a lot of people that are going to say, I've seen U2 and I've seen them in Glendale. To me, okay, I've seen it. Been there, done that. You're right. It's been a long time. But I don't know. I'm still not quite getting the vibe around town.
I don't know if it'll be I'm going to retract what I said. I don't know if the stadium is going to be full, but there will be a very big crowd there.
35. What constitutes a good crowd? 35,000. In my mind, 35,000, that's a good crowd.
Yeah. 80 to 85% of the stadium full.
But if you're J.D. Martinez, are you one of these guys that wants the big white hot spotlight? That wants the big national game? Like, how many times have they even been on a national game? They haven't much. They've just been going and doing their thing. So, Jeff Van Rapphorst on the other side, ASU, Todd Graham's future. What has he seen out of Manny Wilkins and much more? That's next. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. All right, let's talk ASU football now for a couple of minutes. After the loss to Texas Tech, ASU is 1-2. They have Oregon coming in this Saturday night to the stadium. And so far, the fans are not pleased very much with what's happened with Todd Graham's team. To lend some perspective, what he sees, the veteran eyes, the great quarterback, Jeff Van Rapphorst, the great Sun Devil, part of the Sun Devil broadcast crew with Tim Healy. He was in the booth at Lubbock and trying to make your way through a weather delay. I appreciate you joining us. And what do you make so far out of what you've seen out of Todd Graham's team, Jeff?
Well, I think it's a team that is going through some learning from the standpoint that, you know, Tim and I were talking during the first broadcast. We've never broadcast a game where you've had two brand new corners and two safeties, so your entire secondary was brand new. Throw in four new coaches, throw in a new offensive line coach, a new offensive coordinator, new defensive coordinator. I mean, that's a lot of change to absorb. And I thought last week was a pretty good game as far as how they finished, what they were able to do, and really going towards establishing some kind of identity.
So from my view, I watched, and they started out, it felt like, on roller skates, but they found their footing. The offensive line found their way after what I thought was not a good showing the first couple of weeks. That was the first and biggest area to me that was a problem. What did you see out of the offensive line? Did you think they've got it figured out?
Well, I think they're a step better. I think, you know, obviously they started Cole Cabral, the left tackle at center, and we had a couple of bad snaps. I think they would like to get Cole in there just because he's 6'5", 285, 290, and he gives you a lot of size. He also is so athletic that if you want to pull him, you know, against an even front, it gives you that kind of opportunity. But he had some bad snaps on the road. That was his first start at center. And they had to go back to A.J. McCollum. Zach Robertson played some left tackle. So I still think they're trying to figure that out a little bit. But I, like you, was encouraged by two things. One is we ran the ball effectively, and I thought the pass protection was much more sound than in prior 2 weeks.
Conversely, defensive side of the football, I saw entirely too many missed tackles early in the game. Felt like they settled down in the second half. Yeah, losing Crump is a big, big blow to them. What did you see out of the defense?
Well, I saw a defense that in the first half, it's hard to practice against Texas Tech's tempo. Even if you want to do it in practice, you almost need to have two offenses loaded up so that you can go back to back. And I thought Tech did a really nice job. If they had a successful play or a first down, they were snapping that next play, you know, within 7 or 8 seconds. I mean, it was lightning quick. Mm-hmm. So it took a little bit of time, I think, for guys to settle in. And when you've got a brand new group, you're trying to get alignment, you're trying to get responsibilities. The other thing that's a little different this year, Brad, is that instead of having the defensive signals signaled in, the linebackers are calling the plays. So, you know, this is the first time these linebackers have had to call plays. And I thought the second half they did a real nice job of adjusting, relaxing. And when you face an up-tempo team, it's not that they're trying to trick you, but they're trying to go so fast they want to catch you out of position, two steps the wrong way, want to have your eyes in the wrong spot. You're not looking. You're not getting your keys. So first half was rough. Second half was very good.
Talking with Jeff Van Rapphorst, the great Sun Devil color analyst, great Sun Devil quarterback with us for a few minutes on the show. I'm wondering your thought on the offense play calling and how that worked out. A lot of Manny to Harry, and obviously they couldn't cover N'Keal. And then Kyle Williams comes into his own. So that's a different look than what we saw the first couple of weeks from my view. What'd you see?
Yeah, I said on the air that I thought Coach Napier called a great game. And, you know, some of that for him, too, is learning the talent that he has. You know, it's one thing to practice and see kids in practice, but other times in games, and you realize how dominant Nikhil is just throwing the ball. You know, get it close to him. He's just an absolute vacuum cleaner. You know, New Mexico State, I thought they did a great job of throwing the ball to their big wideout, making plays. And I think, you know, ASU, I thought Coach Napier really learned from that. He's got to get Nikhil the ball, got to try to get Williams the ball. You know, he gives you that underneath slot back threat that they haven't had in a while. So, and I really like what they did offensively. I thought they really showed more creativity and even just connection in their calls. When you look at the overall call structure, how they go run, pass, inside, outside, tempo, all of those things were pretty sound last night, on Saturday night. As I say, last night, two nights ago.
That's fine. Manny Wilkins, so far from your view, what have you liked most about him? What concerns, what does he need to get cleaned up?
I think Manny, one, he's taking care of the ball. And two, I think he's really showing a thick skin. I think some of the comments and tweets that have come out that were kind of going after him, you know, last week, I thought were just absolutely ridiculous. It's very difficult to play, you know, quarterback at Division One. It's also very difficult to be in a new offensive scheme again. And, you know, he's making checks, moving people around. So you've got to give him a little bit of time as well. The thing that Manny does is he extends plays very well. He's got that escapability, so defenses have to be cognizant of him on the move. I thought a couple of his throws when he found his third receiver, he hit one of the backs out of the backfield. You know, he's getting pressure, and he just dumped it off. He just knew that there was some relief over there to the right. And to me, that's what you want to see. You want to see somebody who just can instantly turn his body, find that third receiver, make a positive play out of something that, you know, is going to be a negative. But, boy, I thought that was a good showing for Manny last Saturday night.
Jeff, you're a trusted voice. I mean, you're a Hall of Famer with ASU. Fans know you. They listen to you. You've been here for a long time. Can you address the anger, resentment, the social media side of things that's directed towards the program and what you see? I mean, everybody can tell, I think, outwardly that this is a big year for Todd Graham. There's no question about it. Anybody who says it's not a big year for him, I don't really think he's engaged with the program. But with every snap and every play now, it feels as though it's life or death around this program. What do you see? What's your message, I guess, to what they say is Sun Devil Nation?
I think my message is that people need to get some perspective. And if you look at the last 5 years of where we were before Coach Graham got here and afterward, we're in a completely different spot. We're in a different spot academically. Been no off the field issues. You know, for the first time ever, the team has over a 3.0 GPA. The team moved into new facilities. And I can tell you a lot of those facilities, Coach Graham, he basically acted as kind of a final set of eyes and ears on the design. His attention to detail within the program and even within the designs of that building were amazing. He's gone out and got his own boosters. You know, he brought additional people into the program to infuse money that allowed us to do some things in that building that would not have been otherwise done. They weren't in the budget, quite frankly. So I think, you know, he has really committed himself to trying to build a program. And I get that that everybody is ultimately evaluated by wins and losses. But my message is, let's sit back and evaluate and give people the opportunity to play. You know, let the coaches coach, let the players play, and let them go through this season. You know, every year coaches go through an evaluation internally. Everybody else in administration goes through that evaluation, not any teacher. So let the process, you know, bear out. I think the one thing that my message to the fans is, don't get spoiled. Don't look always to the future. Enjoy what you have right now. There's some really good players on that field. A lot of players, you know, I mean, Nikhil Harry is just an absolute specimen, and he's going to be playing at a different level on Sunday. You know, I think Kalen Balazs has that kind of, you know, skill set that he could do that as well. But just enjoy what we have. You know, we've got a college team that's in change, and let's embrace it. And fans don't realize, Brad, and you know this because you've been around, the environment, game day environment, really can help out the home team. Mm-hmm. When fans show up late, when fans are disgruntled, when fans leave early, or even when they tweet and comment, it doesn't help. You know, recruits here, it's used against us in recruiting. So, you know, if you're part of Sun Devil Nation, then be part of Sun Devil Nation.
It's tricky because now that the letter of intent day has been moved up to mid-December, if a coach gets off to a slow start, and ASU's off to a slow start, I don't think there's any way to put it. And with the daunting schedule in front of him, you do just try to take it one week at a time. But there comes a point, Jeff, I think, where you can't sit here if a month from now and if things are down a path that aren't too pleasant and say, well, we're going to lose a recruiting class if we don't get this figured out. And it's no secret Ray and Michael have said what they've said, Michael Crow, Dr. Crow, and Ray Anderson, about needing to see more out of Todd this year. So with every week, this week against Oregon, it's really a litmus test week by week with him. This is not something where you can sit here and accept it, I don't believe, week after week if it doesn't get better.
Well, I mean, that's your take on it, I guess. I think every time everybody starts speculating on different things, I'm not sure that really it really helps on where we're at. And I think when there's that environmental pressure, and I think a lot of it's media generated, that it puts more pressure even on the players. And what the players end up doing is then that bus gets smaller, that wagon gets smaller, and it's all about us, and it's this us against them mentality. And I really don't want to see it, because I came to ASU when it was a packed Sun Devil Stadium, when fans were behind you. I threw five picks one game, you know, and people didn't lose their minds, and thankfully they didn't have Twitter and all this other stuff. But, you know, you have a chance for redemption, and you have a chance to get better. And you want people, you know, hey, if people can go out and have a great month and hit 110% of their goals and never fail in their work, I think there's either two things. Either their work's too easy, or they're not setting their bar high enough. And I'm not saying here we should lower the bar at ASU in any way at all. I think we should have a high bar, but I'm not sure what all the dialogue and some of the made up pressure that comes is how that helps.
Okay, Oregon, let's talk about on the field then. So Oregon this week, what has to happen for ASU to come away with a victory at home in the Pac-12 opener?
Well, I think we've got to cover better. You know, our cover corners are pretty good. They're in the right spots. I thought last week against Texas Tech, we got exposed a little bit from a blocking perspective. They had big wide receivers, and you know what they were doing is they were throwing the ball to number five side, and you know he's our smallest DB, and they were blocking him, and they were able to turn it up inside. So you want to see those corners, you know, make plays, try to get off blocks, make some tackles on the perimeter. You talked about tackling, that, you know, that's a key. I really thought Christian Sam and DJ Calhoun had a really good game. I thought the first 2 weeks they really struggled at inside linebacker, but they really had a good game, and that was nice to see for them. So what do we need to do? We need to tackle well in open space. We need to make sure offensively that we have same efficiency, extend the drives. And the last thing is, boy, special teams has got to get cleaned up, because, you know, we had a 7-point loss, but we, again, had issues in special teams that really hurt us.
Appreciate the time and insight as always, Jeff. See you at the game on Saturday. Thanks.
Go on, Brad. Appreciate it. Go Devils.
Good stuff there. Jeff Van Rapphorst, color analyst and the Hall of Famer over at ASU. Appreciate hearing from Jeff on things around the program. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. Our television show on Fox Sports Arizona, 16 airings a week. You can check it out, Brad Sussmat, Football AZ, on Tuesday and Wednesdays before and after the Diamondbacks, the Suns, Coyotes, all part of Fox Sports Arizona. Back with more after this timeout. So there's some news involving the Cardinals game with Ezekiel Elliott. I'll get to that in a second. Over the weekend, what a great story. And this, I got this from ASU fans, because I haven't been very happy, obviously, with what's gone on. I've written about it, and it's fine. And I appreciate Jeff coming on. I respect Jeff's opinion a great deal. I think it's just a crucial, monumental game for them to start out Pac-12 play and not get their doors blown off and look good in the process. And I thought there were some signs last week. I would agree with Jeff against Texas Tech, especially late in the game, even though it ended up being yet another loss. So I got a bunch of, well, did you see what San Diego State did stuff yesterday? So first of all, yeah, San Diego State did beat Stanford. And I think we said here on the show they could give Stanford a run, because Stanford's not good against running the football. They're not. They gave up 300 yards on the ground to USC. So games in San Diego, but it was odd. Here's what happened. So this game ended so late, the lights actually at one point at the end of this game went out. So, and Eric, you're watching this, you're telling me. So You stuck with it.
It happened during a commercial break, and they came back. And Jay Feely was on the call of this game for CBS College Sports. And they came back, and basically they showed Rocky Long on the field, and you could barely see him. It was that dark. And about that time, it was after 1 a.m. Texas time, so I quit on the game and called it a night.
Yeah, I quit on the game, too, and I shouldn't have. I saw where San Diego State was leading. So they end up winning the game. Power outage, this is in San Diego. Now, remember, this is a city that just lost the Chargers up to L.A., and the Chargers didn't draw flies, and they lost again. But look at the reaction in San Diego. And for perspective's sake, okay, I did the Aztec games for several years when Marshall Faulk was there, so nobody gave one rat's about San Diego State actually charging the field. It's because they don't have any other football there now, so San Diego's become a college town. I've had some people over at ASU that said, you know, with all the pro sports, we will never have the crowds that we once had, and we will never get the fandom that we had at one point in time. And I just vehemently disagree with that. Winning is a cure-all. So it was cool to see, you know, in San Diego. And they're 2-0, and they're ranked now 23rd, I think, in the country. So, look, if you're an Arizona State fan, you can point out, hey, well, look at San Diego State's not that bad. Yeah, well, you probably shouldn't have given up a 95-yard touchdown run, and you probably shouldn't have given up a long kickoff return for a score either.
99 yards, to be exact. And speaking of ASU, we have a quick update from Vegas. The Sun Devils are 14.5-point underdogs Saturday against the Ducks.
Two touchdown dogs at home.
Yep.
Wow.
A lot of points.
It's a lot. And I watched Oregon, Wyoming because I wanted to see the whole Josh Allen hype thing. Not happening.
He got run over.
He couldn't move.
He's being labeled now. He's being labeled as a really good quarterback who plays really well against Mountain West schools but doesn't play really well against Power 5 schools.
Eric, I watched a good portion of that first half, and Oregon just beat the snot out of him. I mean, they just tore him up, threw him around like a rag doll. I had no idea what was going on. And so when I get this whole he's the next quarterback for the Cardinals from some of these Cardinal fans, come on, watch what they're doing. I get it. He didn't have much help, and I'm not saying he can't improve, but the whole Heisman thing, that's not happening. No.
But there's a bunch. This is a really good quarterback class. So
the next two years.
If it's not him, it could be someone else.
The next 2 years. Okay. So I'm looking at my Heisman deal right now. Baker Mayfield, Mason Rudolph would have to be 1 and 2 in my book. I watched Lamar Jackson the other night. It was his marquee game against Clemson. He didn't make the big plays like the Clemson quarterback did. Josh Rosen was forcing balls against Memphis. That's a bad loss for UCLA. Doesn't matter how beat up they are. You lose on the road, yeah, that can't happen. Lastly, so Ezekiel Elliott is going to play against the Cardinals. A district court judge in Texas today denied the NFL's motion for an emergency stay of an injunction that is allowing Ezekiel Elliott to continue to play while a 6-game suspension works its way through the courts. So he will be able to play this week for now. As we're sitting here right now on a Monday, the game is still 7 days away. It doesn't mean that change can't happen, but Ezekiel Elliott will be on the field. And that's only going to pump up the market for the tickets. Scalpers are going to do really well in this game. Because if you're a Cardinal season ticket holder, you can either go to the Cowboy game, or as I've had several of my friends who are season ticket holders tell me, Brad, all I need to do is scalp the tickets to the Dallas game, and it pays for my whole season. So why would I not scalp these games? So, and they can try all the different ways they want to monitor scalping and protect the nest and all that stuff. People will find a way around it. All right, tonight we have baseball. The Diamondbacks playing in San Diego tonight. We will watch that. Detroit and the Giants, Monday Night Football. That's a tough watch. Unless, I mean, I've got Odell Beckham. That's the only reason why for my fantasy. That's the only reason why I would find myself watching that stuff. There's not a draw there. And we'll be back at it tomorrow with Peter King. Peter will be with us. Michael Fabiano will be with us, and much, much more. Jared Nielsen is our chairman of the board. Eric Sorensen produces. As always, enjoy your Monday. Thanks for checking out this podcast on Sports360AZ.com, brought to you by your Valley Hyundai dealers.